Hey, thank you to Helix for sponsoring this podcast. Adam has had his Helix mattress for almost a year now, and he's loving it. It's actually hard to get him up. In fact, he won't stop talking about it. You'll understand what we mean when he goes into detail. Thank you for the detail, Adam, later on the episode. But for now, we want to tell our listeners about a special deal going on. Our Sleepy Time Pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and, as if that's not enough, two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula. This is their best offer yet, and I'll bet it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
A detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
One of my favorite things. Welcome to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. A special thanks to our house band, Mr. Jorge Reyes on the saxophone.
Yeah,
all right, and today we've got a very special treat for you, a vacation show.
In order to take a vacation, we're making this shorter episode without guests. So we're here. We're like, you know, when you email somebody and it does the automatic reply that they're on vacation.
This is the podcast version of the automatic reply.
Right.
Except which is way more entertaining. Yeah.
Then they email you back anyways and you're like, wait a minute, I thought you were on vacation. That's sort of us.
Because you know what it is? There's always that first time when somebody comes back from vacation that the automated reply happens and it reminds them, oh, yeah, I got to shut the automated reply off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not a very efficient system.
But we are, like, right while you're listening right now, we're on vacation.
We're on vacation. This is our staycation episode, though, because it's a staycation because we're here right now.
Yeah.
I don't know why we didn't just record a regular episode a week early.
We didn't record a regular episode a week early because this one is easier to do because we have no guests.
We have no guests. So it's just me and you helping people through their lives.
Yeah.
And actually, we have a vintage thing from the vault, which we're going to get to right away, which is kind of weird when you think of a 12-week-old podcast that we have a vault.
Yeah, we have a vault.
And it's musty.
It's very, we had to dust off some of these pieces for you. Our vault is very much like the one in the office of the National Enquirer.
Right.
There's a lot of really seedy stuff about everybody we know in there, and we like to let them know, there's naked pictures of me.
Right.
All inside
it's
that
very
vault.
Very disturbing, because everybody has access to that vault.
I could not sell, I couldn't give those naked pictures away.
No, so you put them in the vault, where everybody has to see them whenever we go to get something from the vault.
Yeah.
In fact, some of us feel a little pressed by those, and would kind of like you to take them down maybe at some point. Because
if
they can be in the vault, you don't have to hang them on the walls of the vault.
There's people who won't even go in that vault.
Yeah,
how I keep my jewels safe.
Right.
I put them in the vault, and people know the combination. That's not a problem, but they realize
walk in the vault.
There's going to be naked pictures of Paul Poundstone.
It's there, like, is how much jewelry could you have?
There is no precious gem. There's no amount of money that could make that shot worth it.
Right, and some of them aren't naked. Some of them are your patented thick high waisted cottony briefs.
Oh, yeah, but to a certain select member of the population, that is quite a turn on.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So those are the people who might take your jewels. My diamonds. Who took my diamonds? Well, so do we have any vacation advice for people to what to do or not to do on their vacation as long as you and I are going off to take a vacation?
Absolutely. Yeah. Turn off your flat thing.
Really?
Yeah, don't take your flat thing on a vacation.
What if you're going to a flat thing convention?
Don't do it. Okay. I would totally advise not to go to a flat thing convention.
Sure.
But, you know, your handheld screen device, your flat thing, leave it, or at least turn it all the way off in your...
So that you can really enjoy the vacation.
Exactly.
And
let me stress, never Google on the beach.
Now, you're not saying never Google the phrase on the beach.
No, never you're on the beach.
Right.
Google.
Why?
Because it ruins a vacation. There's no Googling on the beach. I think that's a simple
request. Let's say your loved one gets bit by a jellyfish.
Yeah.
And you're on the beach. My impulse would be to take out my flat thing and go, is this a deadly jellyfish or not so deadly?
See, I would go to the lifeguard.
Really?
Yeah. Because they know what to do. They have like a jellyfish salve right there in their butt pack. Yes, they do.
They have a jellyfish salve?
They have a jellyfish salve. That's not what they put on you. They put that on the jellyfish.
Because it hurts to sting a person.
Yeah. If the jellyfish gets injured, they rub it on their protoplasmic...
Wow, you just took yourself to a place where you have zero knowledge.
That's not true. You know what I'm going to make for you right now? I'll tell you what. Right now.
A vacation balloon animal.
I am making you a jellyfish.
A jellyfish. You know,
with a thin layer of salve on the top of it. This is for you.
I will give you this. This is one of your most accurate balloon animals ever.
Thank you very
because
much.
Because as I've told you in the past, you don't, in point of fact, know how to make balloon animals.
That's not true.
But so this
that
looks like this looks like at least the top
That's
half of a jellyfish.
That's what I'm doing on my staycation. Is
you're going to finally learn how to make one of these?
I'm going to Balloon Animal University.
Which is not a thing.
And yes, I am. I'm studying with Professor Poodle.
Professor Poodle of
Professor
Balloon
Professor Poodle
U.
Of
BAU.
Yeah, exactly.
BAU Professor Poodle. That is just a nest of lies there.
No, it's entirely true.
Okay, well.
So, all right, so here we are at the vacation episode.
And we're going to kick things off with a review of the original movie so you don't have to see the sequel or might want to see the sequel. I think our producer, writer, Ken Lizebnik, titled it So You Don't Have to See the Sequel.
Yeah.
Because I think he knows that you pretty much don't like anything we've watched so far.
But we have really not picked winners so far.
The original point of this was that we see the original
right.
when the sequel's about to come out.
Exactly.
And then you and I will advise the listeners as to whether they should bother seeing the sequel.
Right.
And
this is based on the notion, people always say, well, the first one was better.
Right.
Right? So if the first one already sucked, then it's going to be exponentially worse.
It's just going to be downhill from there.
Second one.
And so what happened was, a lot of people don't know this, but we actually did prepare for this podcast before we started.
Yeah, there was a lot of preparation. It's in the vault.
And we did. And we
a lot of the
and
tapes
we did
are
some
in the
test
vault.
Shows. And one of the test shows we did way back in February of 2018, if you can cast your mind back to those heady days, was we pioneered this segment. The movie review thing.
The segment that we have coined, review of the original movie so that you don't have to see the sequel. That's what we've titled it.
No, that's what Ken titled it, and I think it's a terrible title.
It was a clever name, and
no,
I'll tell
you
something.
It gives away the ending of the review is what it does. It's a spoiler in a review.
That's not true.
Which is kind of amazing.
No, and if I have another cat, that's exactly what I'm naming it.
Really?
Review of the original movie so that you don't have to see the sequel.
That's what a great name for an animal.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in February, the movie Pacific Rim Uprising, the sequel to Pacific Rim, was poised to come out.
Yeah.
And so if you want to.
And Adam was excited about it. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's another spoiler to this upcoming review. But yes, I had already seen the movie. But the movie has now come out on home video. So we figured like this moment right now during this vacation episode might be a great moment to see what we advised about Pacific Rim Uprising back then. It is time now for advice on movie sequels you should maybe not see or maybe see.
That's a catchy title.
Yeah, it's a work in progress.
Yeah, we're taking submissions on those.
but it is a segment that we feel strongly about. You and I have talked about this. What we're going to do is movie sequels are coming out all the time. So as a public service, Paula and I are going to watch and review the original film to tell you whether or not you should see the sequel. So coming this spring is the sequel to a film called Pacific Rim, It's called Pacific Rim Uprising. And I'm a fan of Pacific Rim. It's the 2013 American sci-fi film directed by Guillermo del Toro. It's set in the future where Earth is at war with colossal sea monsters, which have emerged from an interdimensional portal on the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. You know, the usual stuff. Now, Paula and I took the time to view this film together to see if you should see its sequel. Paula, your thoughts on Pacific Rim?
Well, if you're trying to have a friendship, don't suggest that they see this movie.
Wow, that's
actually, it was very fun seeing it at your house. In the beginning of the movie, and this is before like the title sequence.
Yes. There's like 10 minutes before the title.
Yeah, it was very, so there's a guy talking who turns out to be like the main character. And he's talking, him and his brother are in some sort of bunkery thing. And he begins saying, he says he had always thought of aliens as things that came from outer space.
Right.
But in fact, they come from, you know, under the ocean.
An interdimensional portal that opened under the ocean. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which many of us have always suspected. Right. And, but then he proceeds to say, he says, you know, my brother and I, and there's these very, you know, as he's talking, you're seeing them, and they're getting up to go into action. And they're both, of course, incredibly buff.
Yes.
And he says, you know, my brother and I, we weren't good students. We weren't particularly good students, he says.
We weren't athletes.
And we were not athletes. And meanwhile, you're looking at these guys that are just ripped.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, this is great news for every couch potato viewer watching this movie right now, because they end up being heroes. And you're like, well, great. You know, I can just put.
So that was your takeaway from that opening.
They were laying a lot of plot pipe there, too.
Like, you know, in order to combat those sea creatures, they had to create this class of giant robots that needed two interlinked people to control them because they were so big.
Well,
Any of that resonate with you?
Well, I don't care about that part. What I cared about, the reason I think that the film would have been popular is that right off the bat, they lower the bar for every single person watching. They go, oh, wait, you can be a lousy student.
And a lousy athlete.
And a lousy athlete and still be a hero. And I think that just makes Americans gravitate to a film.
That could be it.
So,
that could be part of its appeal.
And beyond that, and Adam had said to me, he said, well, because of this director.
Guillermo del Toro.
He said, that's why, even though it's an action.
Do you like
action,
how I do it the NPR way? Because I noticed that in NPR, they've decided now that whenever we say somebody's name who's not like an Anglo-Saxon, what we're going to do is we're going to do a somewhat insulting parody of what we think that language might sound like.
Yeah, no, you sound like you're
Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, you sound like you're announcing one of the buffet foods at Over the Border restaurant.
But you know what? And I noticed that they leave certain ethnicities out of that on NPR when they do that. Like, nobody ever says, and now with the financial report, welcome Mario Bartiromo.
Oh, they don't do
fake Italian accents. Right, yeah, and it's Pat McCluskey here with movie reviews. They don't do that. Anyway, I'm becoming you. I'm digressing.
No, go on. It's a very important point.
Okay. So the director, Guillermo del Toro.
So Adam said, well, this is why the characters will be given more time to develop.
Yes.
Which, by the way, I would think that came from the writer, not the director. But anyways.
Okay, fair enough. I'm a writer.
The characters didn't develop any more than any other action movie character you've ever seen. There was the unlikely hero.
Yes.
It was that very common now, what is it called, Armageddon sort of theme.
Sure.
You know, it's going to be the end of the world.
Right.
A lot of nosebleeds in this film, ladies and gentlemen.
There was a lot of nosebleeds.
Yeah. That every time somebody, like a huge monster would crash down, they'd knock over entire buildings, tons of real estate destroyed, ocean crashing in, all sorts of horrible, awful things happen. And a guy's, you know, the character who you're interested in at the time, his tie is now, you know, it's kind of sideways and he has a nosebleed.
Yeah, that's kind of a movie thing. But, you know, that's a universal movie language for something bad with your brain.
Oh, is that true?
Because, like, the nosebleeds never have anything to do with, like, bad sinuses. I mean, it's like something's gone wrong. And in this movie, they had their brains wired up to giant radioactive robots.
I would just love for one of the characters, after all the horrible things happened and the destruction, and I just love for one of them to take out a Kleenex and go, my God, it's dry. I the only one that's just dry right now?
I feel like that would be a mixed message. I think they're trying to convey brain stuff, and what that would convey is really dry air conditioning.
Yeah, well, it's a, you know, I think it's a, okay, the main character has a beef, so to speak,
yeah,
with another character that's in this, you know, bunkery place that they're in at some point. And there is absolutely no reason for them to have any kind of a tiff. It's just clear that the script needs that. There needs to be like this.
Yeah.
You know, because the big monsters don't talk.
Right.
So
which
they
is kind
be,
of a problem with any one of these movies.
Yeah, they can't really be
monsters.
The antagonists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
you don't go into that other dimension and see these aliens plotting.
No. And the other thing, okay, one of the things I noticed right away is that from the very first, before the title sequence even ran, these brothers are told they're going to go rescue, like, Japan.
Yeah.
And they're told there's a fishing boat with 10 people on it that are in jeopardy. And their commander says, don't go to the fishing boat. Go to get the rest of Japan saved.
Okay, I'll say two things about that. Number
right
one,
away, the brothers go, let's go get the fishing boat.
That shows their humanity, their essential humanity. They will save even 6 people, even though
that's
their commander's
not humanity. Another. That's not following directions.
That's true.
It's
I'll point out two little things. The commander was Idris Elba, who's terrific, I think. And
I don't know Idris Elba.
I'll introduce you sometime. And then, no, he was great in, like, The Wire and stuff.
I didn't see The Wire.
He was terrific in it. And the location was, rather than Japan, Alaska.
Oh, was it Alaska?
Yeah. Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while, we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now, I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince, of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds. Yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some, too. What I got is the Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy, and it fits beautifully. And these are, like, premium pieces of clothing that are selling for, like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at Quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on, and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that, too. Like, so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
European. They are so European. And you can get those kind of, you can get washable silk tops. You can get 14-karat gold jewelry and, like, all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing, they cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because
first sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress and she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress and I sleep so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally and everybody just piles on it and it's comfy. And yet when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix Sleep Quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the Midnight Lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, not right now.
And if you're going to get it anyway,
use our code.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
The other thing is, I often couldn't tell the difference between the big machines of the good guys,
right,
which were the Jaegers.
The Jaegers. The machines were called Jaegers.
Yeah, they were called Jaegers. I sometimes couldn't tell where... I think the Jaegers knocked down as many buildings as the... what were the bad guys?
The Kaiju.
Kaiju.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Kaiju, which were more sort of lizardy.
They were the interdimensional beasts that were coming to destroy the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they seemed to have no other plan than that.
No, no. They
the
didn't.
Whole plan was just destroy the planet.
Well, and what we learned then, later on, you build, might have fallen asleep.
And but... then build some hotels. Who does that remind us of?
That's right. But we never, they
it was,
never,
the it point was is kind that, of a biopic, really. It was a subtle biopic.
Sure, that must have been what it was. It was a... They never got to the hotel building, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
You know, we did manage to, you know, there's so many sci-fi movies where what you have to do is close the portal. There's always a vortex or a portal
or
an interdimensional doorway, and you have to close this. This is one of those classic close the portal movies.
And then, of course, the commander who's about to die has to make the speech where he gathers everyone, who most of whom you couldn't tell what their job was, even though they're all working so hard. He gathers them all together in this sort
of... Maintaining giant robots is pretty much
the
job.
Yeah, in the giant robot maintenance area. And he says, now we all work together. And as if they had not been working together before to save the Earth. Now, today, it's, you know, we all work together.
Oh, come on. You can't have a problem with that.
I did have a problem with
really?
That.
Really? So you think, like, the Super Bowl is about to be played, right? So you think, like, before the Super Bowl, it's okay if the coach just doesn't say anything to the team? Because they've played together for a while.
Not something lame-o like that.
Well, this is saving the world.
I hope he's not going to say, let's go out there and run and throw the ball.
That's pretty much what they say.
Is it really?
Yeah, what do you think they do?
And the players go, what? Run and throw the ball?
It's reinforcement. It's, you know, it's
Jesus, their whole lives they've heard run and throw the ball. I'd love to have a football coach go out and go, today, protect your heads.
Yeah, I mean,
just for God's sakes, no matter what, protect your heads.
So many of the elements of this movie do not appeal to you, such as...
I didn't like that, you know, sort of the phony adversary.
The phony adversarialness to prove as they were vying for a position.
I didn't like the we don't listen to our commander right off the bat.
That
in the
really
very first
bugged you,
scene.
Which is...
Well, it did, because
arguably,
his
in just about every
died.
Action film, the rogue guy who doesn't listen to the commander is a kind of important figure.
Yeah, yeah. And let's go to real life and see how often that's true. You know,
okay.
Like, you know, it's right. You go to, you now cut to an elementary school and the kid who doesn't listen sits in the hallway.
So your ideal action movie would be a couple of guys who play by the rules, never step out of line and don't talk to their commanding officer before the big fight. It sounds like a
Hold
terrible
on a minute. Do you have a pencil?
I do.
I'd like to write that down. I think I'm telling you something. This could make a very unique pitch for a film.
Yeah. You're a loose cannon, Wilson. No, I'm not. I'm actually a good rule follower. Oh, yeah. Well, me too. Let's get lunch.
That's how it works, Adam. That's exactly how it works. These.
I guess we got to get to the advice portion of this, and I suspect our advice
okay.
is going to be different.
My advice is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here comes a sequel. Pacific Rim Uprising, which will not be directed by Guillermo del Toro.
No, but wait a minute. Didn't they already seal off the portal and now there's another uprising? What happened?
That's something that actually gives me some trepidation. Number one, lack of del Toro-tude. Number two, they already blew up the portal.
Right.
So now you have to lay pipe and open up another portal.
Portal's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know the kaiju have to come back because it's not really, it's just giant robots with no... reason to exist, raison d'etre.
Yeah. I think it should be Pacific Rim 2, Now We Rebuild. Pacific Rim 2, this time FEMA does it.
Right. Pacific Rim 2, The Contractors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These contractors follow directions.
Well, I'm going to flip over the cards and let you know that's not the plot of the upcoming one. And based on the fact that it's kind of going to be the same movie, more or less, again, would you say see it or not see it?
I would say I don't even see the first one, for God's sakes.
Okay.
I would say do yourself a favor.
And skip both movies. If you can go back in time and skip the first one, you would say do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would say see it with the caveat that without Del Toro and with a director who's never directed a movie before, I'm a little skeptical.
I liked your dog and your cat that kept coming to the door while we were watching.
Yeah.
I thought that was the best part of the film.
But they wanted to see the film. Wow, thank you, Jorge Reyes. You're fitting in just great down here at Ray Horseman Studios, I think. And you and Ray seem to be getting along well, which is great.
Yeah.
On the saxophone, house band, Jorge Reyes. So that was our review of Pacific Rim Uprising. Wow.
Now, it's keep in mind, it's not in theaters now, so don't rush out to see it.
Right. it already hit the theaters, and it was considered a bomb, I guess, compared to the original, directed by Guillermo del Toro.
That's the guy, by the way, that won...
Eventually won that Oscar for...
Best Director for, what was it, The Shape of Water. Which someone on Twitter... The Shape of Water, for those of you who may not have seen it, was an odd love story between a woman and a sea creature.
Yes.
And
a humanoid sea creature, to be fair.
It was a sea creature.
It wasn't like a jellyfish.
It wasn't a jellyfish, but it was a sea creature.
Yeah.
And so somebody on...
They had a mutual love of eggs.
Somebody on Twitter called it Grinding Nemo.
Yeah, that was great. There were some really good ones. The Grinding Nemo
brilliant.
Was my favorite.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. But he won the Oscar for that. He didn't win it for Pacific Rim.
Hard to believe.
The sequel to Pacific
There's
Rim.
There's no justice.
Was considered, I guess, a bomb, although it did gross $290 million worldwide.
And yet it was considered a bomb. And $290 million, how would you compare our podcast to that in terms of income?
Oh, we're right up there with them. We're just like a 289 point something million short.
Yeah, close enough.
Point. Yeah.
Close
yeah.
enough for
more or
yeah.
less same level of success as yeah. the Pacific Rim Uprising. So
yeah. Some days some days when I go to leave my house, it is so hard to cram all that money into my back pocket. It's been tearing at the seams of my pockets.
Yeah, that's
a problem I'm having.
Only true in a world where we're both wearing very tight pants.
Yeah, like in the pictures in the vault.
Right. Right, yeah. That picture of me has to come down, by the way.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
Science?
And if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin Alhassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
We're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the
best.
Okay,
best
never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Thank you, house band Jorge Reyes. Paula, because you dispense advice on this show, we've had listeners email us with questions they'd like you to weigh in on. And tonight, we're going to open up the mailbag and get some of your answers. Paula's answers to listener questions is the ad hoc title we have come up. We're terrible at titling segments.
I don't think that's a terrible title. Paula's answers to listeners' questions.
All right. Paula's answers to listeners' questions. Jorge Reyes, can we have some mailbag music? All right. Thank you, Jorge Reyes. You can even see Ray Horseman was grooving to that one. All right. Here's the first question. Elias from...
It's a great song, isn't it?
Yeah, it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, we built this city.
Elias from Potomac, Maryland asks, quote, how do I get rid of bugs in the bathroom? There are spiders, crickets, centipede, and logy houseflies in there.
Now, I'm assuming, Elias, that you've already tried leaving dead bug bodies around the bathroom.
As an example?
As an example,
that,
yeah.
That never works with bugs, Paula.
Oh, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Have you done this in your own mind?
I have, and you got to see the look on an ant's face.
When it sees a dead ant?
Yeah, when they realize a logy fly has recently passed.
Oh, you wow.
You know, ants don't like to say the word died.
They say past?
Yeah, past. They're very sensitive about that.
Yeah,
you know, moved on.
Yeah, okay.
You know.
So, but you have lots of critters in your house.
I have an almost, you know, for a while we were having a section on the show called What's Paula's Infestation This Week?
Right. Again, testament to our amazing segment naming abilities.
Yeah.
We can brand like a mofo here and nobody listens to all the bounce.
People love our segments. A lot of times when I walk down the street, people say, oh my gosh, that's the woman.
That's a well-named segment.
Yeah, that's the woman who does the segment, What's Paula's Infestation This Week? And they love that. Yeah, so, I've had a lot of bugs. I actually never really came up on my own with how to get rid of them.
But we've had experts on the show.
We have had experts on the show.
We had somebody talk to you about the bees in your backyard, which you like.
Right.
About the logy flies.
The logy
about
flies,
about the rats eating your
Well, they say that
nectarines.
The logy flies are after food. They're just not quickly after the food.
Yeah.
They, you know,
or and, they're full.
Yeah. Are they ever full?
You could be catching them after they've eaten your food.
They're like an overloaded helicopter. You know, as they fly, they sort of keep dipping towards the floor.
In fact, they could be in the range of even a lazy but somewhat motivated cat, and yet your cat's never touched
them. No, my cats won't help. But I have found, and I've mentioned this on a previous show, that when they land, they really are so logy,
right,
that you can sometimes just thop them with a finger.
Thop them.
I mean, I'm not a big bug killer, but I...
But it's hard to resist thopping a logy
fly. I don't know. Those logy flies are just so awful.
Well, it's just insulting that they think that they can be that slow and around and fly around your house.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, lots of flies, you can open the door and they'll fly outside, but not the logy fly. The logy fly is not a bright fly.
No, it's not a smart fly. I think the only stupider fly is the crane fly, which I believe I mentioned on a separate episode as well, who don't seem to really be able to distinguish between air and wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just flying.
Yeah.
Okay, but fortunately, somebody more knowledgeable than us has weighed in. Producer Tony Hull, and that she's related closely to Tony Anita Hull, contacted our bug expert guest Jordan Leach of Unbug Me Pest Control. And
Jordan, he was great.
He was terrific. And
he was on a former episode. And so Tony called him for us to help answer Elias's question. He said that for the bathroom, and I believe that's where he said there was a problem, there are a couple of hot points people should look out for. I think right away the toilet. Nothing frightens me more than the idea of any kind of creature coming up through the pipes.
That might
threaten
you, but it's not something that happens a lot outside of, say, like sci-fi channel movies.
No, you see it on local news stations all the time where like a snake.
A weasel came out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, a snake or a large spider came up.
I would say they're on the news channels because those are uncommon events and thus news.
Yeah, but,
common
it happens
events, like,
a lot.
I don't think
And they
it
show
does.
Like the traumatized... Eliminator, let's say.
Eliminator.
They say the bare bottomed eliminator with their eyes bugging out of their heads.
I think
horrified.
It's amazing that we have Jordan Leach's answer in front of us.
And I still can't get to it.
And you got it wrong. Because
I didn't get it wrong.
Turns out it's not the toilet. It turns out Jordan Leach is there that at the base of a lot of tubs, there are cracks and crevices where the porcelain or whatever meets the ground. And those are the cracks you should seal up with caulking. Yeah, that's one of your hot points. Another hot point is doors and windows. You should make sure that there are no cracks or openings in the wood, because the wood might have rotted a little bit or something, or just opened up a little bit, and then critters can get in
Next
there.
Next thing you know, insects pouring through like it's a Pacific Rim portal.
Right.
Pouring.
Well,
in
see
like
that movie had an effect on you, because it's been months since you saw it.
Horrible movie.
Anyway,
another
thing that
movie.
Will improve the condition of your area is by simply mopping the floors.
Yeah,
I feel like that's a little insulting to our listener right there.
In this area, I feel Jordan has lashed out at Elias.
Yeah.
Elias, we want to apologize. Elias, how about you just clean your bathroom, for God's sakes?
Yeah. We did not invite you on to insult our listeners.
Yeah, and what he said specifically was sanitation will greatly improve the conditions of the area. He says by simply mopping the floors. You know, it's simple for some, but apparently not for Elias.
Well, at least that's what Jordan thinks. Oh, if there are spiders in the bathroom, which it seems like that's one of the things in your bathroom, they're most likely collecting in the windows or
collecting
cabinets.
They are collecting. Like what? Hummels?
Hummels? They don't have hummels. No.
Yeah.
Spiders don't collect hummels.
There's nothing more delightful when a spider has assembled hummels there in your windowsill in your bathroom.
Yeah,
why would you want to get rid of that spider?
Well, if your spider
is
either collecting hummels or weaving clever messages like some pig then you leave the spider alive.
Look at these antique thimbles. Aren't these delightful? Who put them here?
That's not the kind of collecting that is being talked about here. But They like baseball cards.
They love baseball cards.
No,
yeah,
they don't.
They collect in the window the baseball. Oh, look, a Babe Ruth.
Jordan says just take a duster to it, okay? So either dust away the webs or dust off those Hummel figurines.
Jesus. All right. Jordan must think that Elias is like an idiot, for heaven's sakes. Yeah, just dust the wind. If you got cobwebs, dust the window.
He does sound impatient here, because he says he moves on to houseflies and say, houseflies are looking for food and water again. Wiping down the walls, throwing out trash, and reducing moisture.
I love wiping down the walls, and they're looking for food. Like, who has food all over their wall in the bathroom?
I don't know if you're feeding your baby in the bathroom, maybe, and they're flinging creamed spinach or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the problem could be that your spider has a collection of antique fruits and vegetables. Right there, and that's where the flies would come after that.
Again, probably not. And of course, he goes on to say that if none of this works, you probably have to contact somebody like him.
Yeah.
Now, I do admire that.
Oh, I think we all saw that coming.
Well, you know, he did take the time to write many paragraphs about how to take care of pests yourself.
He did.
Before he finally said, oh, for God's sakes, Elias, just call me.
Yeah. Yeah, no. At first, honestly, he did not suck up to Elias. I mean, the first thing he did was just humiliate the man over and over again. Clean your bathroom and stop eating in there. And stop rubbing food on your walls.
Put your pantry somewhere other than next to your toilet.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're what are those plates? What are the plates from the Franklin Mint? Yeah, that's the Franklin
you're
Mint.
You're still
plates.
On the spider collecting.
Yeah, the spider collected the Franklin Mint plates.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. I say we move on to the next
Three
question.
Stooges and Sound of Music Franklin Mint plates.
Well, maybe you're a
hanging
spider.
In my, but they're hanging in my kitchen.
Okay, well, let's move on to our next question.
Yeah.
Shall we?
Yeah.
Susan Bernardo asks Paula this. Do bees have noses? I do not mean do they have a thing like a nose, though that would be fine to know that too, but literally, do they have noses? Where on their faces or bodies the nose resides would not be a disqualifier in calling it a nose, would it?
I don't think so. But I think that leads to the important question, do bees have plastic surgeons?
I was going
to
go with, is Suzanne Bernardo stoned?
I'll tell you, no.
Because do bees have noses? Thinking back to my college experience, that's a dorm room thought at 1 a.m.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I didn't go to college.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of these thoughts just creep up on me during my adult life. Beverly Hills bees do have noses.
They do?
Yeah, and they start out large, and mysteriously, one day, they show up smaller.
And they're like, oh, I don't know, I just had a deviated septum.
Yeah.
Z-z-z-z.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my impression of a Beverly Hills bee.
Yeah, that was really good.
I had a deviated septum.
I had to have this operation.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
You know? Thank you very much.
Yeah, so you went to college?
Yeah, I did. I specialized in bee impressions.
Yeah, that was really good. You went to BU. All right. All right. So what did we?
We do have an answer for this.
You know, they have to have noses. I already know the answer.
Why?
Because they have to have something to blow because of their pollen allergy.
All right.
The pollen makes them congested.
All right, it doesn't.
And it does.
Bees are the last creature on Earth that would be allergic to pollen. It would be like a lactose intolerant cow.
You don't know because I have a birdhouse full of bees
right.
in my backyard.
And they're constantly sneezing?
And their whole lives is...
I would say
and if they're from Beverly Hills, they go. Yeah. Anyways, okay. So
they suddenly have. I just picture these bees suddenly not only having like smaller noses but enormous breasts.
Enormous breasts.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because they're getting a lot of plastic. They're getting a lot of work done.
Plastic surgery. Yeah. And I just thought you were inspired by my pictures in the vault.
I was certainly not. For the record.
Boy, you're really not a flatterer, girl.
I know. For the record, an exhaustive Google search tells us this about the bee and its potential nose. The honeybee has two antennae attached to its forehead. Each antennae has thousands of tiny...
antennae?
It's spelled antennae.
Yeah, but that's not how the natives say it.
What natives? Of what?
Bees.
Oh, the bee.
I have a birdhouse full of bees in my backyard.
That doesn't make you an expert.
Exactly,
that makes you a lady who has a bad birdhouse.
I know exactly how they say antennae.
Oh, because when they're talking to each other, they say, hey, how's your antennae hanging?
No, they go, zzzzzzzzz.
I like that
and that's because of
the
pollen
allergies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And they say that these antennae, which is wrong, have thousands of tiny sensors that detect smell like a nose does. And bees also have a proboscis sticking out, which is usually the nose of a mammal. But in this case, it's an extensible tubular sucking organ. Ew. It's like they look like those like New Year's Eve noisemakers that unroll when you toot them.
Yeah.
And so when a bee is feeding or drinking, its proboscis unfolds to form a long tube that the bee uses to sip like a straw.
Those are not straws.
Well, they're not straws, but they're no longer allowed to do this in Santa Monica because of the straw ban.
That's right. Wait a minute. So they don't have, so the way they smell.
Right. Is through the antennae.
It's through the antennae.
But the thing like, where their nose would be that looks a little nosy is like their sucky straw.
Uh-huh. So, like, for example, my dog uses the bathroom in the backyard, honestly, right over near
right.
where the birdhouse filled with the bees is. So when the bees come out and there's fresh dog waste there, they pinch their antennae with their hands.
Right.
So they're like, oh, gross. And then they talk like that.
Right.
They're like... Z-z-z-z-z.
Similar to the bees after their plastic surgery on their proboscises.
Yeah. That's congested bee buzzing. Z-z-z-z-z.
You know what is interesting in that...
breathe.
Is that when you give a bee a proboscis job,
yeah.
they can't eat as much. So for a Beverly Hills bee... A nose job is like win-win because
they get the weight loss.
You lose
as well.
Weight, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, you look so good, Miranda. Well, yeah. I don't know. I have a deviated septum.
had my nose done.
And now I can't eat, but I feel great. Well, you look great.
Thank you. Do you smell that dog waste?
No, I can't anymore. No, that's different. That would be the antennae. They probably don't get antennae jobs.
No.
All right, let's move on to the next question. I think you're going to take this
next
one, Paul.
Next question is fantastic.
Okay.
Here's another question, and it is from John in Ohio. John writes, there's a pretty girl who rides my bus to work every day. It doesn't have many riders. I haven't spoken to her because I'm not a morning person. I'm autistic and tend to be awkward, and I thought she was too young for me. I'm 41 and feared she was half my age, but recently I saw her on Bumble, which is a feminist swipey dating app, and I don't think she's too young for me after all. How do you decide? That's another question.
Interesting.
She has a punk or goth look with tattoos and piercings, including her septum. I probably look more like a nerdy white guy. I've never had a girlfriend, and I have a hard time not looking at her when she gets on the bus because she's so pretty. But I'm always afraid anything I do will come off as creepy or awkward. Should I approach her, or is the bus creepy because it's a confined environment where we're both stuck? Should I just smile, or is that too vague or passive? Or should I forget about her and look somewhere else? This has been stumping me for a while. Now, social cues.
Social cues.
Social cues, you know, it's a very good question.
It's a very good question, and social cues are very hard for autistic people.
Yeah.
By
the way, they're not, you know, clearly they weren't that easy for Clarence Thomas either. They're,
Yeah. I don't know why this went to Clarence Thomas, but
I've been thinking about him lately.
Okay.
I don't think that reading, the difficulty of reading social cues is in no way exclusive to autistic people.
That's absolutely true.
There may be cases where it's, you know, more pronounced, but I think we all are like, oh, I don't know. Is now,
did that come off as weird just there? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that if I, let me just say, John, that if I were on a bus, and
I've been seeing somebody on that bus every day.
Well, right. Part of it is the fact that it's you meet them regularly. I think that makes it a perfect opportunity, in fact, to say, hi, I'm John.
Right.
You know, or just ask a question like, are you on your way to work, or do you go, you know, are you on your way someplace to hang out?
Yeah.
On the airplane, I always use, are you on your way to work or vacation? That's my big...
That's your
my
gambit?
Big, that's my big line.
Do you have lines on an airplane?
I do.
Because I know that, knowing you, that, like, that first line, if somebody replies to you, well, they don't need an audiobook from that point on.
Yeah. They pretty much don't bother renting a headset.
Right, because they've got you. They've got entertainment on the aisle.
But I find that's a good...
Do you think John should... This is an idea of mine. Do you think John should just kind of, like... put some of his cards on the table and say, like, hi, look, I'm terrible at reading cues or anything, but I see you on this bus every day, and I thought I should say hi. I'm John.
I think that's good.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to go, like, you know, hi, I'm John. I think you're really pretty. Would you like to go out with me?
No, that's
I think
not.
But
acknowledging the reality of the situation.
Unless it's a Greyhound bus and you're going all the way across the country.
Right.
But on a short commute, John, I would say... just start with an introduction and keep the expectations low.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you one thing that girls can feel sometimes.
What?
Is high expectations.
High expectations?
Yeah. They can feel pressured by high expectations.
Oh, right. Like if John seems to want something a lot out of that interaction, then it feels like, oh, wow, now there's a lot of pressure on me to make a decision. Whereas if he were to say something like, hey... we should just acknowledge the reality that we're on this bus together every day. Maybe we should know each other's names.
Exactly.
That's not a lot to ask unless her name is very hard for her to pronounce.
Yeah. Here's another way, John, and I don't, you know, this is obviously entirely up to you, but hi, I'm John. Do you listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the podcast? That could be a good way.
Yeah.
Girls love that.
Now it sounds like you're just trying to advertise our podcast one listener at a time.
Not at all.
That's exactly what that sounded like.
Not at all.
It's like you wanted John specifically to tell this person about our podcast.
John, Adam's not going to let me say this. So if you know anybody else that might listen, John, tell everyone you know about Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
All right. And thank you, John. And thank you to everybody for writing in.
Those are great questions.
Those are great questions. You can continue to send in questions because we will take other vacations. So send them in to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone at gmail.com.
We named that at gmail.com.
We are just geniuses.
That's a clever handle.
We didn't actually come up with gmail.com.
Oh.
The cat of the week is Butters from Utica, New York. Thank Thank you, house band Jorge Reyes.
We can fix that in post.
Yeah. If you have a question for Paula, email it to, as we said, nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. That's where you can send your theme songs, too. We're not doing theme songs on this episode, but that's a great thing.
Oh, yeah. We're not doing theme songs on this episode because we're on vacation. We're not even here right now.
No, we're recording this via...
We're not in this room.
No. Find us on Facebook,
though.
But
you guys can still theme songs.
Find us on Facebook, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and follow me and Paula on Twitter.
I love that idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
We're just going to sit here because there's a line at the bottom
of
this.
No. Oh, my God. You know, I'm so in the moment.
Yeah, you are.
I think we're done here, Adam.
Yeah.
Time for vacation.
Vacation's all we ever wanted. I'll meet you on the beach, Paula. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Felber. Produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Technical direction by Ray Horseman. Special thanks tonight to tonight's house band, the inimitable Jorge Reyes. He plays around town with Aileen Quinn and the Leapin' Lizards. Our security guard at Ray Horseman Studios is Jonah Muscles Glickman.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.